one of the differences that obtains, one of the psychological differences, it's like a watershed difference. As soon as you hear it, it'll surprise you how simple it is. One of the watershed differences is that on a mythic horizon, on a sign function horizon, language is spoken out loud. When the symbolic capacity comes into play, one is able to speak to oneself silently in one's mind. It seems so simple. Not all of you share particularly the Christian orientation, but let me just give this example because it is so precise and profound. In the Gospel of Matthew, when Jesus is delivering the Sermon on the Mount, he gets to a point to where his intensity is so poignant that he says, if you think that by going to the synagogue and praying out loud, the Lord is going to respond to you, I tell you that he only responds in kind. That the true way to pray is to go to your own monastery in yourself and pray silently there. For the Father knows exactly what you need even before you ask for it. It's like a powerful way of making this point. That as long as you are limited to just responding to the world, language has to be spoken out loud. But when you put it together in such a way that you are a mobile presence in the world of yourself, then you pray silently inside. That's a major difference. It's like the difference of the symbolic capacity coming into play. It's a major difference. And incidentally, pursuant to this, at the time of Jesus in Roman schools, you were not allowed to read silently. They would wrap you with what would be a ruler or a pointer at that time if you read silently. You had to read out loud. If you were studying composition, you'd use... generally, about the time of Jesus, they would be using Cicero. And you'd have to read them out. So all the students would be reading them out loud. And if the teacher found somebody who was reading it silently, they would rap them. It didn't happen very often. And very often, later on in the first century, one of the signs of people who had this new capacity were people who would not speak it out, but have that silent prayer of the heart. And they'd pray together in silence. It was like a patent indication of a new consciousness, a new symbolic capacity, which the Romans didn't have, did not allow to occur. So you can see that there is a monumental kind of an interplay here. The thinking function then comes into play in such a way that I have to use a term, don't confuse it with a theosophical term. Thought forms become intelligible. They become visible. Whereas before they'd been invisible. They'd been subconscious. They'd been implicit, they now become explicit. The forms of thought processes become explicit. And language acquires a written form. There were long millennia of human beings just like ourselves where there was no written language. I have to say this again and step back a step in our thinking, because this is a profound. There are at least 35,000 years and maybe more of our species, Homo sapiens sapiens, with the same intelligence that we have, where there was no written language at all. The development of a written language is a very profound profound development. It's being able to use the thinking function in its own terms, in ways appropriate to itself, so that written language, a very profound change. The difference between speech and writing is the difference between a mythic language and a magical language. Magical in the sense, the traditional sense, of being able to change, to transform, by introducing a symbolic integration into the mix. We still retain today the kind of primordial, childlike example of the magical word, abracadabra. Where the one magical word uttered in a situation changes the whole situation by taking it out of a natural base and putting it into a magical base, where he or she who controls the symbolic energies controls the new form of the situation. It's a way, a fairy tale way, of expressing a profound change that has happened. The silent thought inside, paired with the written thought outside, is a very profound kind of an expression. It gives for the symbolic consciousness the edge now in its thinking function, where the feeling function becomes invisible, as it were, yet still there. I'm losing my voice somewhat, so we'll have to go to examples of equations in just a moment. The making of equations is a similar task to the making of amulets. And just so, in like kind, the making of ideas is like the making of talismans. Equations protect meaning from being lost, whereas an idea is able to project the meaning out into the world, into the life. An equation is a short form of holding the meaning together in that particular form. But to understand the equation, one then has to go back to the equation and open it up. Open up in terms of what meaning you put into it. But when it comes to opening up an idea, you don't do that. You don't open an idea up by seeing what you put into it. You open an idea up to see how it works, what it is doing, what effect it has. So you look for the effect of an idea. Whereas for an equation, you look for the meaning that was put into it. And you start with each sign. And its final understanding is the integration of each sign into the symbolic pattern, the equation. And the idea starts off right where the equation is, but goes the other way. It goes into an expressive application, which is why, for instance, it's so difficult for someone to judge the worth of an idea. Just in the idea, you have to also look, well, how does it work? What effect is it going to have? So that the realm, the range of the application of ideas is in terms of persons and events. And that's the only way that you can tell about an idea. Whereas for an equation, you can go back into the pattern of the meaning, go back into each sign, you can check it out. You can make sure that the equation is right. by doing that kind of checking, a sign analysis, and a symbolic integration. Whereas for ideas, ideation, it's a different kind of thing. And you can surely appreciate now why modern civilization has such a nightmarish situation facing itself. It is because we have operating all kinds of very powerful ideas that no one realized to what extent they're going to be complicating situations. The simple idea of the equality of man turns, it sounds like a great idea, it turns out to be fraught with all kinds of complications that come out. So that our dealing with the powerful symbolic form of ideas is like someone, in analogy, someone dealing with a very powerful set of talismans. And you don't put powerful magical talismans in the hands of the apprentice. The sorcerer's apprentice will always mess it up. Do you remember the little scene in Fantasia where Mickey Mouse is the sorcerer's apprentice, commands the water and the broom, and then a mess comes out? Because those symbolic forms, like talismans or ideas, are so powerful that they require an individual, they require a personality to integrate their capacities. Otherwise, the ideas or the energies of the talismans outstrip the unformed person's capacity to handle them. Someone once said, "No, nothing is more powerful than an idea whose time has come." And the understanding of that is that we know now that ideas have a kind of a lifetime. They have a lifetime of about 150 years. It takes about 150 years for a thought to occur in one person before it becomes common knowledge. So what the society is in a common way now were like brilliant ideas of about 150 years ago. Do you know what was 150 years ago in the 1830s? In the post-Napoleonic era, the beginnings of science, the beginnings of industry, powerful. Not just medieval science and medieval industry. Railroads, chemicals, the whole steam engine, the whole thing, the whole industrial scientific revolution really took root then. It's like popular technology and all the things are the final popular development of those kinds of ideas at that time. And the decade right after the 1830s was the 1840s, when there were all kinds of political revolutions. 1848 was the year of revolutions. We always think of the French Revolution or the American. 1848 was when everything was almost torn apart. So there is a real concern with people to make the point now, when you have a situation where there are very powerful ideas, you have to have capable human beings. Human beings who are not pushed around by the ideas, but who are able to assess aspects of the ideas and encourage certain aspects of it and to weave back in together other aspects that are not appropriate. For instance, the development of technology and the application of nuclear energy is in many ways a very good idea, is in some ways a very dangerous idea. If you don't plan ahead of ways to dispose of plutonium, for instance, in the long run, that's going to be an unacceptable, lethal contamination of the entire environment. So while you want the advantage of nuclear power, you also want to consciously know that in this application of that idea, you've got this problem, and you have to attend to it. It's that kind of a, and you can see it almost becomes so ordinary that it becomes mundane on this level. And by the time it gets to this level, everyone says, oh yeah, well that sounds reasonable. The roots of it are in what we are studying right now. The roots of it. The place where I used to use the example, this is where you put your finger to either tie a bow or a knot. The movement from amulets to talismans, the movement from equations that hold meaning to ideas that broadcast meaning. The mistakes that come in the former are that you don't get the equation. The mistakes that come in the latter, you don't realize until it's almost too late. The mistakes in equations are apparent already because the equation doesn't work. It's not there. But the mistakes in the ideas, you don't know until later. Until the broadcast goes into play in the world and new combinations of activities are happening. So it's not so much that one can predict and make like a safe kind of consciousness, but it's engendering the kind of accurate, clear thought and ambidextrous mobility that are required to deal with the situations that do come up, that are going to come up from introducing consciousness into the world on higher and higher scales of effect. The one aspect lacking for at least 300 years in the West, and the West has now become a world civilization, the one thing that's been lacking for 300 years is a comprehensive educational pattern that allows for human beings, just in a basic everyday way, to A, have the confidence that they can do something about their own lives, and B, recognize that if they work together with other people in conscientious ways, their application of conscientiousness grows. And in the third part, that you have to be able to pass this on to the children, to those coming after, intact, so that they also have the capacity. The last time that there was an educational pattern like this was in the 1670s. And the educator who made it was John Amos Comenius in Amsterdam at the time. And we have a facsimile reproduction of his solution at that time. 300 years ago, a solution was to make the first illustrated textbook of teaching history and rhetoric and everything all together in one single thing. It was called the World in Pictures, the Orbis Picturis. And it was the first textbook. And 300 years ago, a textbook like that was extremely useful. Now, using the same kind of a notion, textbooks today are reductive and are counterproductive. Why? Because the situation has changed. That the leading that idea into society has changed the whole structure, so that now using textbook approach to education is a definite perilous regression. And you can see that children who are exposed to a textbook-saturated educational system now, half of them don't even complete it. And out of those that complete it, about 10% are able to go on. And that 10% that are able to go on just go on with more of the same. And they display two remarkable danger signals. They don't remember what they did a couple of years before, They don't remember any of the lessons. And they're not able to have the kind of creativity and memory necessary to develop for themselves an intelligence. And so they're locked into trusting what the dials tell them is happening, what the information says should be happening. And as you can see, that's flying blind. That's really flying blind. But the indication is not that people are stupid now, but rather that the whole educational system is dangerously regressive. It works exactly the reverse of what it used to work 300 years ago. So part of this that we're doing here, this is an attempt at a new pattern. And I must say, after 25 years, I can see that it works. The only difficulty is that it requires conscientiousness. It requires that you actually do it. And every time that you don't do it, there's that aspect that's missing. And it's finally like a wheel that has all the chinks not there that you didn't do. Well, the wheel's not going to work, right? Let's come to a couple of equations before these machines just carry themselves away. And let's come to a couple of equations and see what we can do. Did anybody bring an equation? Donna and Sina? Let's do these two then, and then we'll...
I'm revising mine mentally. Anyway,
all right, Donna, go ahead. Let's go with you.
My equation is basically
trust over restraint.
Trust over restraint. Yes, equals zero.
All right. It's a matter of to what degree you engage in this process that we call complementarity. The intervening steps I canceled out, the idea of risk. But if, let me put it to you this way, in one of my stories, because one of my characters cannot trust himself, he cannot show restraint towards his opponent. And this leads to dire consequences for the two of them. And if you can't realize that trust is the flip side of risk, and risk is the flip side of restraint, and therefore the trust and the strength are complement, they come from each other to some degree, and conversely they'll collide with each other, or they will just totally expand away from each other, and we'll have an endlessly expanding universe.
let's introduce a word here that that infinitely expanding inflation. Yeah, it's an inflation. Yeah, would be an in terms of the equation that you're working with. And in that inflatedness, one could neither trust nor risk.
Yes,
eventually.
It's a hyperinflation.
Yeah. Okay.
Or if you're totally absent, you will not see the relationship to begin with. There will be two separate entities that will have no bearing on each other. So if you are a person who wants for yourself a world without limits, you will show a lack of restraint in your dealing towards others, most likely, manifest in various ways. And you, I am hypothesizing, would therefore have a hard time trusting others, and conversely, the chances of you trusting yourself, your instincts, your consciousness, your ideas, could be severely limited or limited to some degree, impaired.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Seen it?
When I made my, both my amulet and my talisman, I worked with circles. And so I ended up in circles. But when I did the, when I attached the coil to the rim, I did it four square, the points of the compass. So when I looked in several books and finally came to one that had that picture that appealed to me, so I got the equation that is plotting on a graph, paper, the equation, the formula for graphing out a circle.
Very good. Very good.
And this, to me, locked in the meaning and also had the four-square element to it, so I couldn't.
You were not surprised that there was such an equation, but you were pleased to find the exact equation.
Yes.
Yes.
Correct. Correct. I knew that mathematicians in the room, please close your ears. Or think of something pleasant, but to me this was a discovery, not only finding it out, but then working out the numbers a bit myself, just with a pencil and paper, not a... Anyway, you get...
And confirming that the equation
that
works.
That it works.
Yes, right. That's the point.
The formula is x squared, a simple one, x squared plus y squared equals. And then in the book, they had two different...
A basic book on mathematics.
Yes, Life Science Library Mathematics. They had two different equations, and each one had a different number at the end. So I realized you can pick a number.
Yes.
As long as you work it out, that the two squares added together come out to that number.
In a sequence of equations, you will always have every stage numbered.
And each time you go down a unit and square that and subtract that from the total and then extract the square root of what's left. So this is what I did. And that, to me, gave me a feeling of satisfaction of somehow locking in this material.
We'll Xerox that so everyone will have an example of that, because that's an excellent example.
And also, along with it on the page, it pointed out that x plus y, the coordinates themselves, equals zero. That's the point, the inside point, so I've dotted that out.
Yes, the zero is not non-existent, but it is the inner point, the focus of that circle. Yeah.
And then
it's very important.
They had other curves plotted out with more involved equations, but I was also fascinated with the fact that they had the lemniscate pattern, the infinity sign, also with an equation, much more involved. I don't even...
It is much more involved.
Yes, of course. And, but here's the formula. And
do you want to read that out?
The quantity x squared plus y squared itself squared equals a squared plus times the quantity of x squared minus y squared. I don't know where they get a, but it must be some negative amount.
It's a coordinate, and
to get below the horizon lines.
And you found that in your book also.
That's the same book, yes, along with some other ellipses and another, I forget the term, curve.
Yeah.
But the idea that the sign for infinity could be expressed mathematically just appealed to me.
Yes.
And we think of it as infinity. Now, it's not mathematically showing infinity, but it is the sign that we use to
express that. We use infinity now in a talismanic way. And we're surprised that in thought it is a very powerful idea. It's just as powerful as an idea as it is as a talisman.
With my math, I didn't have anybody to go to. I didn't make the effort to find somebody to advise me, because I wanted to use my own number. I used 6 units, and so I thought I had to start with y equaling 1. I was just realizing, as you were speaking earlier, zero, y is 0, because that's the baseline. Number. It's in pencil, so I can change it.
Well, we'll make a Xerox of that so that everybody, next week, we'll do that and can see that, because that's a very excellent example. For the rest of you, please persevere. Struggle with making an equation and bring it in. Now, there are some people for whom this is so difficult emotionally that they're unable to come today. I have 2 equations that were left here by people who just could not physically and emotionally come today because of such high level of embarrassment. These are all seemingly simple and easy assignments. They're all primordial. And when you're in a real situation like this, your inner self will pick up its antenna at real situations of discovery and breakthrough, and the ego always translates that as peril. Always let it translate it that way and come. The basic thing is just to come, because the continuity of your participation is the seal of your integrity and protection. The way that that was formulated in the 17th century, when there was a terrible crisis of consciousness because all of this mathematical capacity was really being engendered in the 17th century, the esoteric teaching at that time was that the life lived is the doctrine received. It was a wonderful way of giving the benediction of spiritual courage to those who had to wayfare on these high seas of discovery. The life lived is the doctrine received. Don't worry about mixing up the content. If you continue in your own conscientious way, that is what is to be understood. So you can just accept the situation and go through it. I think we'll just leave it.